I'm going to talk a little bit about a project I've been working on down in Texas for the last couple of years that has to do with off-highway vehicle management, particularly wet weather management. There's a whole lot of other issues with off-highway vehicle management. I think the key thing in way of an introduction is it's really dirt management. You know, they call these things dirt bikes for nothing. And they're operating, the trails are operating on native soils. So the big issues really with sustainable use on these things has to do with managing that soil resource, which is the track, the tread, and issue offsite issues such as water quality. One of the problems that the OHV managers have is they want to, in order to have a sustainable trail system, they want to manage their trail treads and the drainage structures. And this is often overlooked, is because whether you got traffic out there on the trails or not, if you don't have them properly drained, they're going to erode whether you close them or not. And what I'm going to talk about here today is the issue of when to open and when to close these trails. But anyway, that's their goal. And the problem is with managing these native surface trails is that when the soils are moist, they're readily compacted, and that's a good thing. So operating the trails out there when they're moist is good. However, the transition from good moisture, in other words, where you can get some compaction that helps hold the tread together, and where you start to get damage is a pretty narrow one. And then, as some of you will recognize, this as the shape of a typical Proctor curve. And all it really says is that for a given compactive force, and each soil has a whole family of these curves, as you go from dry to moist, you increase the amount of compaction you get until you reach a point where you don't have any empty pores in the soil, and then the ability to compact it further drops off very rapidly. The point I want to make here is that there's, between that green line and the red line, that's a pretty narrow transition, and that's really the ideal time to be out there riding on the trails in order to get the benefits of the compaction from the use. And incidentally, that's the best time to be riding because you don't have all the dust and all those other issues. And that's when the riders want to be out there. So the goal that the OHV manager has is trying to maximize that riding time while minimizing the damage. Now, in terms of opening and closing the trails, there have been a lot of things that have been tried. Some of them work better than others. Most of them don't work very well at all. First of all, there's seasonal closures, which is sort of like, well, it starts to rain in October sometime, so let's just shut it down from October till next spring and be done with it. The problem with that is you're losing a lot of good riding time in the time of the year when it's most desirable to be out there. So it's the reason it's done is because it's easy to administer. It's kind of a lazy man's way of dealing with a much bigger problem. Another approach is closing the trails when you get some damage. Well, this is kind of a holdover from logging timber sale contracts where a lot of contracts have it specified, well, if you get 15% rutting in the trails, then we'll shut them down. And the problem with that is, that works at a timber sale when you have some equipment out there to fix the damage. And you can deal with it right away, and you have a contract to enforce that action. With OHV, you don't have anybody out there, you don't have any equipment to fix it, and you probably don't even have a budget to manage the things, let alone fix any damage. So that's some forests are actually using that as a solution, but it's a very poor one. And then the one that's more typically used is based on precipitation. And this has not been very satisfying. For a number of reasons, precipitation-based closures are usually based on measurements taken off-site, like at a ranger district or someplace remote from the area. So what's happening on your area and where you measure it doesn't even correlate very well. If you do try and correlate it with measurements taken on-site, usually the network of your rain gauges is way too coarse to capture what's really happening out there. And then the next two are probably even more important is the precipitation is really an indirect measure of the moisture in the soil tread and the drainage structures is what you're really concerned about. Some of the water runs off, some of it gets drained off the trail, some of it gets captured by the vegetation. And then you've got to deal with antecedent moisture conditions and the rate of drying and a whole bunch of other issues. So at best, rainfall is just a very crude indicator of what you might have in terms of what moisture you have in the trail tread or the drainage structures. And then to make matters even worse, the thresholds you set in terms of precipitation become legalistic. A good example of this was on the Mendocino Forest, where they had a fairly sophisticated way of using a precipitation. They allowed for drying cycles and a bunch of other things. But the problem was the measurements that they used were on sites that were broadcast into the NOAA system, so any rider could go on to the internet and find out what that rain gauge had said, and then they got right, whether conditions are right or not. So they ended up getting a lot of damage, as well as losing some riding opportunities. And of course, the biggest thing from the user standpoint is because it's not a very precise tool, they lose a lot of riding time. And that's actually how I ended up working on this down in Texas. Well, there is a better way, and that's to actually look at the soil itself, in the tread itself, as well as in the drainage structures. And this is really, in essence, a way of looking at trafficability. And the advantages are it's site-specific, it's empirical in that it's based on what's really measurements actually taken on your site. And essentially what it is taking measurements of soil strength and soil moisture, correlating that with observed damage and coming up with a model that will allow you to predict based on measurements of moisture and strength when you're likely to get damage. Now to back up a little bit, how this got started was on the Miwok district of the Stanislaus National Forest back in about 1998. The ranger had to deal with an enduro event that would occur roughly around Memorial Day, that time of the year when in some years the moisture situations were very critical in terms of whether that event should be allowed to happen or not. And this involved, you know, hundreds of people. So the ranger was looking for a method to be able to predict ahead of time within a few days of when that event was going to happen, whether she should allow it to occur or cancel it in enough time to notify all of the people that were going to come. So the soil scientist over there, Alex Janicki, came up with a method of using soil strength and soil moisture to go out and correlate that with observed tread failure and develop a little curve that would predict whether they were going to get damage or not. Well, I was up there on one of the, and he used it several times, doing a OHV management review probably about 2005, something like that. And he was going to go out and take the measurements. This was like on a Friday or something before the weekend event. And I went out with him ahead of time. We took the measurements. And then I came back on Monday after this event. And man, and they decided to open it up, even though conditions were marginal. And this thing really worked spot on. So I was very impressed with that. And I just sort of tucked that away in the back of my mind. And then about 2008, this group I work with, Trails Unlimited, had a project going down in Texas where they were having real problems with the users because every time it rained just a little bit, they were shutting their whole trail system down. And everybody was getting really ticked off. It wasn't a legal process at all, not defensible. And so they were looking for a better method. And I recalled, you know, what Alex had done and thought, well, maybe this is something we could try down there. So we did. There are some differences, though. What Alex was doing was predicting the damage for an enduro event, which is hundreds of bikes within a few hours over the trail. And it was under drying front conditions. and it was for tread damage, which is a very simple situation, and it works really well. What we were looking for was something that would be able to predict the damage in terms of traffic ability from normal riding, not an enduro event. And we wanted to put the focus on the drainage structures rather than the tread itself, because that's really the glue that kind of holds the whole system together. And on top of that, because of the concern on the part of the users, we wanted to get the volunteers somehow involved in this process. And that was a really key item. Anyway, to back up just a little bit, what this bait is based on, and this is sort of a talk or some things I give to the users and the managers, so it's kind of really making soil mechanics very simplified. But that's really the key, is to give them some understanding at their level so they can get an idea of how to apply it and how it works. But in the simplest sense, the damage you're going to get on your tread is based on the relationship between the strength of the soil and the load or the force that's applied. And essentially what happens if you apply a load or a force, the soil is going to consolidate until it has enough strength to bear that load or force, and then it stops. So what we can do is use those relationships to identify the kinds of damage we're getting out there. So essentially what's going on in soil compaction is we're essentially squeezing the air out of the soil. We have to have some empty pores because water isn't compressible. So what happens is we end up getting a distinctive type of rut shape, which we can use to predict the kind of damage we're getting based on what those moisture conditions were. And so if we have maybe I can use the pointer here. Yeah, that's showing up. So in a puddling situation where all the pores are filled with water, since water is not compressible, when we put some traffic on it, we end up squeezing it out kind of like toothpaste. The damage comes later when the soil dries out because we've lost our structure. That's when we get the puddling damage. But essentially, the size of these berms that we have on either side of a rut equal the volume of the soil that was displaced here. So puddling is essentially wet soil displacement. On the other hand, if we have some open pores and we compact the soil, essentially the shape or the volume of that rut represents the amount of air we've squeezed out of the soil or the amount of consolidation we've gotten. So we could use these as indicators. Now, another important concept with regard to OHV, wet weather management, is where the moisture is in the tread. And we essentially have two situations. We have a drying front situation, which in California would be in the spring of the year after it stopped raining and our snow melt has stopped. And in that situation, we have a little bit of drying at the surface. It's not real rapid because we don't have any vegetation in the treads. But we do get a little bit of evaporation at the surface. Mostly we're waiting for the water to drain out from below. But what makes that situation so important is that this little dry surface essentially becomes our running surface. And to go back to what Alex did with the enduro, what happens is the thickness and the strength of this dry running surface becomes important in an enduro event. Because as you run traffic over and over, essentially you'll get a pumping activity which will bring moisture back up into that, and then you break through, and that's when you get your running damage. Essentially with normal traffic, you can get away with a little thinner layer and a little less strength because you don't have to deal with that pumping action. So it's a difference between, 200 passes with the vehicle over a week's time versus 200 passes in a matter of a few hours. That makes the difference with the pumping. Now the other situation we have is a wetting front situation, which in California would occur in the fall. Different climatic zones, you get different configurations. And here's a situation where it may look a little ugly on the surface, and But if it's dry enough underneath, you've got the strength so you don't get any soil failure. It was kind of interesting when we were doing our tests down in Texas, when we had the riders out riding to create some damage so we could get some measurements. They were just falling all over themselves with their bikes because the surface was greasy and it looked a little ugly, but it wasn't hurting anything. Okay, so trafficability, as we're using the term, is really nothing more than measuring soil strength, measuring soil moisture, and then correlating those two sets of observations with observed condition, looking for that point of failure. And we're going to use that then to develop some predictive curves that we can use to predict the risk of getting damaged. Now, the tools that we use are fairly simple and fairly robust, because you got to remember, we're going to turn this over to some rec techs or some folks, the OHV managers, who don't have any soils background whatsoever, and we want something that's fairly simple, fairly robust, that's not going to give them a whole lot of trouble. This is probably true of the penetrometer that we use, just essentially a proving ring penetrometer, or a cone penetrometer, sometimes called, used to measure soil strength. For moisture, we're using a quick draw moisture probe, partly because it's not too expensive. And while they are a little bit fussy, at least they're fairly reliable once you know how to use them. There are a lot more sophisticated ways of measuring moisture, of course. So with the soil strength, we have our proving ring penetrometer. For those of you who may not be familiar with it, essentially all this does is when you push down on the handle, like he's doing over there, you compress this ring and you measure that compression in thousandths of an inch, and that can be correlated back to kilopascals or PSI or whatever it is you're using for a measurement of strength. The name cone penetrometer comes from the tip of it, where the diameter of the cone as well as the angle is calibrated back to PSI or whatever you're using for a measurement. Corps of Engineers uses cone index, and that's based on a half-inch diameter cone with, I think it's a 60-degree angle. Okay, and then this is simply the moisture meter, which the quick draw meter reads in atmospheres, or millibars, I guess is what it reads in. And you could read that in any unit you want, but it's centibars is what the dial reads. So that's what we use, just to keep it simple. And then our observed condition, the third variable, is based on looking at the shapes of the ruts that we have in terms of how much failure we got. So if we don't have any berms along the edge of our ruts and we just get a little shallow depression, that indicates that we got compaction rather than puddling, which is a good thing. If we have a deep rut with a large berm, that's puddling, so that's more serious damage. So we're kind of looking for something right in here where we're just getting right on that threshold of getting some damage. And then what we do is simply plot our moisture in centibars versus the strength in cone index, which is what the Corps of Engineers uses. And we end up with a kind of a scatter diagram similar to that, where we have a zone or area where if our measurements flop in here, we've got a very high risk of failure. Over here, we got a very low risk of failure, and then we have a little zone in between that indicates conditions are marginal. Now, what Alex did on the Stanislaw was he was looking at the tread situation, in other words, the track itself, which is fairly simple. What we were much more interested in, though, is the drainage structures, because whether you have traffic out there or not, if you don't have your drainage structures in place, you're still going to get erosion and sedimentation. And what they have on OHV trails is a specially designed sort of drainage structure. If this is looking down the trail, what you have is you scoop out an area, you have a little drainage basin here that catches the sediment. This is slightly outsloped so that it'll drain. And then you have a kind of a big hump, which can be anywhere from 20 to 30 feet long. And the reason for that is you want the vehicles to come down here and ride up over this, and as they go over the top, you actually get a little bit of lift so they aren't wearing out the top of your structure. So what we were interested in is finding out what was the critical place in this drainage structure. So we ended up taking measurements in the bottom of the dip outlet on this shoulder going up out of it at the crest, and then on the shoulder, the downhill side of it. And we actually took three measurements across that from the inside to the outside of the tread. So each one of these structures, we took 12 measurements, and then we did this for two situations, a wetting front and a drying front. And then we had three major soil types. So we ended up with hundreds and hundreds of data points, which we haven't totally analyzed yet. But what turned out is we came into this thinking, well, wearing out the top of this thing, which is really a sophisticated water bar, we call them water breaks or OHV rolling dips. We went into it thinking that was the wear at the top that was going to be our best predictor of failure. Well, it turned out actually it was this data point down here on the outside of the drain that became the most critical point, at least in the drying front situation. Now, that's important because we did get the volunteers involved, and one of the payoffs of this, I mean, the method itself is simple enough for predicting the damage, but in a management context, it was important to get the riders and the volunteers involved so that they would buy in on the process. And one of the things that happened is while we were out there actually taking our measurements, we started to make observations and see things in terms of how these dips were failing. And it turned out, rather than wearing out at the crest of this dip, this was with motorcycle traffic, what was happening is we were getting failure down at the bottom at the outlet, which was eating into this first shoulder, and so the wear was actually taking place in this sort of configuration. Well, like Pierre said this morning when he was talking about, you know, you come in as a consultant to work with things, it's one thing to define the problem, but the real issue is how do you come up with a solution? So it turned out there is a solution. Actually, there's two solutions to this. And one is where we were getting this type of failure was where this gradient coming up out of the dip was too steep. And just by moving the crest as little as 3-4 feet down slope and making that longer and broader, that was one solution. And then the other solution was during maintenance to coming in with a rock rake and keeping this outlet open so that we didn't get water ponding down there to get this failure mechanism to start. So we ended up with a design component as well as a maintenance component to solve the problem of how these things were wearing out. So, like I said, in addition to coming up with a method for determining when to open and close the trails, it was the learning experience that we went through together with the volunteers that was where the real payoff was. So, to summarize, what we end up with is a method to predict the risk of damage ahead of time, and it's based on the local soil types, it's based on the kind and amount of traffic that they're getting, and it's based on local conditions. It's an empirical method in that we're actually basing it on the measurements we've made on site, and it's based on good science and engineering principles. And because of that, we feel that it's going to be much more legally defensible than the precipitation method, which hasn't been, and we've had some problems with it. Right, getting into the implementation of this, closing and opening trails is really one little piece of the puzzle in terms of managing OHV trails under wet conditions. The layout, the location, the design, how you do crossings and the drainage structures, all of those things are equally, if not more, important. And where it takes you is looking at that trail system and identifying where the weak links are in the system. So if you have a trail system, a network, and you have an area that's constantly wet and constantly failing, well, there's a couple of solutions. One is you relocate that segment, so you bring things to a similar level, or you go in and fix it, and there are a lot of ways to fix it. Also, it forces the managers to start to identify loops or systems of trails that respond similarly. All of this helps to increase the amount of riding time they have. And you're still faced with, no matter what method you use, identifying benchmark sites or places to take your measurements. It does require time, it does require effort and commitment, but the reality is all off-highway vehicle management requires that. It's not something that manages itself very well. Yep. And then some of the benefits for the managers, it's a much more legally defensible system. They still retain the authority for opening and closing the trails. They get the users to participate in terms of doing some of the work, and it gives them a sustainable system. And probably most important of all, when the users and volunteers are involved, you start to build some mutual trust and respect instead of this constant fighting that's going on. For the volunteers and the riders, they get more riding time. They get an ownership in the process. They're empowered because now they know how to make the measurements, how the calls are being made. So the managers, the agencies can't pull the wool over their eyes and do some opening and closing when it's not appropriate. And what I found was the biggest payoff is their level of understanding of how things work. I was telling Brenda Buck yesterday at a poster session is, for me, the big payoff came when I was out there last March and we were doing our measurements in our drying front situation. We had one of the riders with us who was riding his motorcycle to create measurement sites for us. And he said, you know, when I came out here, I thought those are just perfect riding conditions. But now that I'm taking the measurements, I see why you've still got this thing closed. So that's where the real payoff comes. And is it a magic silver bullet that's going to solve all the problems? No. It's probably has a lot of areas where it doesn't necessarily apply. Where it will apply is where you have cohesive soils, where the damage is occurring because of low soil strength. You also have to have a situation where the trail system is being managed and you have some drainage infrastructure to protect, which this is one of the reasons it took us so long in Texas, because they had to bring the system up and before we could even get our measurements. And then you need to have interest on the part of the volunteers and the line officer support. It's very important too. So, any questions? Wake up, Sid.
I see that you've got some conflicting interests, I believe. But most of the off-road riders that I know are heading for the Murdoch. They want the Murdoch.
Oh, sure.
And they don't want to ride when it's dusty.
Sure, sure.
So you probably are going to continue to have conflicting interests there.
There's always going to be conflicting interests, but there are solutions. Right. And the solutions involve the riders as well as the managers. And they both have to work at it. And what we found out in Texas, it worked really well. We had a lot of things going for us. We had a fairly simple system. We had very smart and active volunteers. And the use level was light enough and specific enough that we weren't pushing that envelope too. I've got another one going down in Arkansas that's going to be a lot tougher, because things have really gone to pot really fast and the use level is very, very high. And they're gonna have to bite the bullet and say, we can only use this so much. So, good.